Are you ready to take your intermittent fasting lifestyle to the next level? There's nothing better than community to help with that. In the Delay Don't Deny community, we all embrace the clean fast, and there's just the right support for you as you live your intermittent fasting lifestyle. You can connect directly with me in the Ask Jen group, and I'll answer all of your questions personally. If you're new to intermittent fasting or recommitting to the intermittent fasting lifestyle, join the 28-Day Fast Start group. After your fast start, join us for support in the first year group. Need tips for long-term maintenance? We have a place for that. There are many more useful spaces beyond these, and you can interact in as many as you like. Visit jenstevens.com/community to join us. An annual membership costs just over $1 a week when you do the math. If you aren't ready to fully commit for a year, join for a month, and you can cancel at any time. If you know you'll want to stay forever, we also have a lifetime membership option available. IF is free. You don't need to join our community to fast. But if you're looking for support from a community of like-minded intermittent fasters, we're here for you at jenstevens.com/community. That's jenstevens.com/community. Achieving my long-term goals is more about creating healthy habits and less about quick fixes. And that's why I love both intermittent fasting and daily harvest. Tim Spector, a gut health expert and founder of Zoe, and Dr. B, gastroenterologist and author of Fiberfueled, recommend that you aim for at least 30 unique plant foods per week. Daily Harvest helps make it easy. One of my favorite options is the sweet potato and wild rice hash harvest bowl. With Daily Harvest, I'm getting tons of plant-based options built on organic fruits and vegetables that are easy to prep and free of weird ingredients such as fillers, seed oils, and added sugars. Create healthy habits that last with Daily Harvest. For a limited time only, go to dailyharvest.com/ifstories to get $30 off your first box plus free shipping. That's dailyharvest.com/ifstories for $30 off your first box and free shipping. dailyharvest.com/ifstories. Welcome to Intermittent Fasting Stories. I'm your host, Jen Stevens, author of the New York Times bestseller, Fast, Feast, Repeat, as well as the book that started it all, Delay, Don't Deny. I lost over 80 pounds thanks to intermittent fasting after learning how to delay my eating rather than denying myself the delicious foods I want to eat. Now, who's ready to hear an inspirational intermittent fasting story? That's why we're here. So let's get excited to talk to today's guest. Hi, everybody, and welcome to episode 406 of Intermittent Fasting Stories. Today, I'm here with Mochi Kaimu. Mochi lives in Worcester, Vermont, and he works for a company that is building a sustainable food network connecting consumers to farmers. And I just love that and can't wait to get into that. But welcome, Mochi.
Hey, it's great to be here.
Well, I am so excited to talk to you today. And you know I like to start by asking, what brought you to intermittent fasting and when was that?
It was 2019, right before the pandemic. At my work, I listened to podcasts, and I was listening to a podcast, and the hosts were talking about intermittent fasting, and I had never heard of it. And at the time, I had just seen some unflattering photos of myself taken at a beach vacation in Folly Beach, South Carolina, where I saw these folds on my back that I had never seen before.
Gosh.
And also, my favorite pair of black jeans were tight. I wasn't fitting into them. They weren't comfortable anymore. So I was looking to lose a few pounds. Now, I've never struggled with my weight, 5'10", and my weight averaged about 175, pretty much, you know, since I was 18 years old. So weight's never been an issue. I'm active. I run, I swim, I hike, I camp. But I didn't like the look of myself in that photograph, especially compared to my brother, who's younger and fitter. And also, you know, I like my pants and I want them to fit. So I was looking for a way to lose some pounds. And this host was talking about how he lost 15 pounds in like 3 months doing intermittent fasting. So I was like, So I immediately did a search, you know, with my podcast app and came upon your intermittent fasting podcast. And I tried to listen to the first episode, but I couldn't find it. I could only find the second or third one. The first one, yeah, I don't know where it is.
Well, that's the one that I had with Melanie, the intermittent fasting podcast. And that one, you know, quote, got lost. It's a long story. I won't go into all of the why it got lost, but it got lost. And so it started with episode two.
Yeah. So I listened to episode two, and immediately I said, I got to try this. And we eat dinner at work on Tuesdays. We pack up all the orders going down to Boston, and we all sit down together and eat, you know, some of that great Vermont food together. And so we had finished eating at 5, and I was like, I'm going to do this. You know, I calculated what's 16 hours. I figured I'd start with that. And so that turned out to be 9 o'clock. It's like, I can do that. I was a little concerned because Wednesday is my run day, and I was going to get up and not eat and go running. I thought that might be an issue, but I figured I'd slog through it. And so the next day I got up, and I love to eat breakfast. You know, the first thing I do, you know, ever since I can remember, is I wake up and I eat. And so that was a little different, waking up and not eating. I went for my run. I felt great. I set a timer, you know, for 9 o'clock. And when it went off, I ate, and I fell into it really easy. And I immediately pretty much went up to 18, because it's like 9 o'clock. That's kind of early. I can eat at 11.
And right.
My family, I have two daughters, and we homeschool them. And so since they don't go to school, they sleep in late. I built our house. We live off grid here in Vermont. And so for years, I was waking up early to get, you know, started on the house. I'd get up at 7, eat my breakfast. The girls would sleep in. They'd wake up 9 or 10. So they would eat breakfast. We wouldn't eat breakfast together. But suddenly with intermittent fasting, I'm not eating till 11. We're all eating breakfast together. So that was
I love that.
Yeah, that was an immediately positive change. Another thing I noticed right away was when I closed my window, usually at 5 or 6 o'clock, I didn't snack anymore. And I was a habitual late time snacker, you know, 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock at night, I'd curl up with a book, get a, you know, bag of chips, or make a yummy, which is like a quesadilla, but filled with jelly and bananas and chocolate.
Oh.
And that was my go-to snack. And I cut that out and never looked back. I mean, I have not eaten past 8 o'clock in 5 years, and I do not miss it. I do not miss the snacking at all. I sleep better. My only concern, I said, was the running, because I am physically active. And initially starting out, I had a cheat day on Saturday, or not a cheat day, just a day off where I would, okay, I'm going to eat a little bit later this night so I don't feel like compelled. But that quickly went by the wayside too, because I just fell into it so easily.
So you allowed yourself to have a Saturday because you thought you would want to. And I remember that from my early days of intermittent fasting, you know, trying to plan like what I thought I would want to do. And I'm like, you know, I would really enjoy having longer windows every Saturday and every Sunday because it's the weekend. But eventually you're like, I don't really want to have longer weekends or longer windows every weekend because I feel better just with my routine. Is that kind of how it was for you?
Exactly. That's how it was. And like I said, you know, once I was done eating at 5 or 6, I had no desire to eat again until the next, you know, the next day.
Yeah. See, that sounds so much like Chad, right? You know, Chad, my husband, never needed to lose weight. He was still fitting into all of his pants. He wasn't growing out of his pants, but he was just so sold on the health benefits. But his window is very much like yours. He waits until 11. And starts eating usually around 11 every day, although he can wait if he needs to. If he's got, you know, something going on, he can wait. But he does not eat past 8 p.m. really either. And just like you described how you would snack late into the evening, he would do that exact same thing too. And now he doesn't do it.
You know, it's wonderful. Also, what I found out, you know, not eating until 11 o'clock, I have time for, you know, more chores and stuff. I get up, I go for a run, I do my exercises, I bring in the wood, I fill up the water tank, you know, I let the chickens out. And, you know, I thought I was going to miss waking up and, you know, not eating breakfast. I thought I was going to miss breakfast, but I don't. I just move breakfast to 11 or 12 and I skip lunch, which is awesome.
You delayed it. So you're breaking your fast with your girls, with your family, and you just have delayed the time that you're opening, and you know, you're still having it. That's such a great solution. So you still end up with about a loose 8-hour window, right? Sometimes shorter, even shorter.
Initially, I did. Now, you know, every day is different. But back then, it was 16 to 18 hours.
Okay, that makes sense. So let's talk about the running. You mentioned that you were concerned that it was going to be hard to run without having something to eat because we've been so programmed by, you know, fuel up for your exercise, fuel up for your run. Tell us how that works for you now.
I'm not a big runner. You know, I run to stay fit, so I only run a couple times a week. And this winter has been so icy and miserable that I haven't been running at all. I've been cross-country skiing. But I don't find any lack of energy whatsoever. So it's really not an issue.
I think that's important.
Was just a momentary concern, and it went away pretty much immediately.
That's good. And the reason I wanted to highlight it is because you're not the only person that has that concern, especially when they're new to intermittent fasting. Because like I said, we've been so taught that, oh, you got to fuel up. So you can't imagine that you're going to be able to do it. And then once you're adapted to fasting, it's like, oh, I can do it. So were you cross-country skiing in the fasted state, or was that something you do later in the day?
It depends on the conditions. I usually like to do it upon waking up because beautiful sunrise, it's colder then, the snow's firmer. But this year's been a weird year. It's been really warm or really cold, and we haven't had much snow cover. So, you know, I haven't really been doing much cross-country skiing this year either.
It's just whenever you could find it. Yeah, that makes sense. It's like an El Nino year or something. I don't really know, right? Isn't it something like that? I don't know what that means.
It's definitely warmer here in Vermont than it has been, for sure. But when I initially started fasting, you know, I figured I'd give myself, you know, we were going to Hawaii. I started in August. We were going to Hawaii in December. I'd be back in a bathing suit. So that was my goal. I'll give it 4 months, see if it's working. But even before we left for Hawaii, my black pants started fitting me. And I got curious, so I stepped on a scale. And in 3 months, I had lost 15 pounds. I was down to 160. And I was like, wow, this is great. This is totally working for me. I'm doing it. I'm not looking back. And I also combined intermittent fasting with some other things because I'd had a history in the last, I don't know, before I started fasting of having panic attacks. I'm older. I'm 58 years old. When I started fasting, I was 55. And I had a weird experience at work in 2017. We were packing groceries. A coworker of mine had given me a CBD gummy, and I think it made me a little high. They say it can't happen, but I think it did. And I had this weird sensation, and then I had a panic attack about it, and I ended up going to the hospital just to be sure something weird hadn't happened. And they gave me a CAT scan, and they saw a spot, and they told me they thought I had a stroke. And so, you know, that shook me up. And I had to wait the whole night to get an MRI and then wait a whole another, you know, day to get the results of the MRI. And so that whole time I'm thinking, oh, my God, I had a stroke. I'm older. I got to do something, you know, to start, you know, being proactive about my health. And the MRI came back totally clean. They told me a CAT scan is like a fuzzy photograph. An MRI is high definition. And there was nothing wrong with me at all. And also I'd had some issues with blood pressure. I have to take an exam because I drive a truck every 2 years, and my blood pressure is always, you know, 130, 140, 150, which I find is high, and I have to be under 140. And so usually to get my blood pressure down there, they put me in a dark room and I just lie there for 20 minutes and then come back and my blood pressure is fine. I have that white coat syndrome where I get nervous about having my blood pressure taken. And it goes up. And when I was in the hospital for this anomaly, I watched the blood pressure because I was hooked up to that stuff. And I saw how my blood pressure went up and down and up and down. And I kind of got over my fear of my high blood pressure at that time. But I still wanted to be proactive. So I got this book called The High Blood Pressure Solution by Richard Moore. And in that book, he talked about the potassium sodium balance in our diets. And so I started reading labels of food, and sodium is in everything. You know, I was eating so much food that had high sodium in it. And so I developed my own special breakfast, which I call a potassium bomb, which is this high in potassium, yogurt, granola, lots of fruit, and oatmeal, which I soak overnight with coconut water. So I'm getting a huge amount of potassium in my breakfast. And that made a huge difference. The next time I went in for my exam, my blood pressure was fine. I wasn't worried about it because I'd been taking, you know, steps to deal with the anxiety about it. And so I wasn't worried about it.
I love that. I want to highlight that for just a minute because I think that's super important. It ended up being your potassium-sodium balance being out of whack. It's ironic that you mentioned this because just this morning, there was a post in our Delay Don't Deny community where someone was talking about their blood pressure. And Sherry, who struggles, I think, with her personal potassium levels, I mean, I know she does, but she talked about this exact thing about needing to make sure that your, you know, everything was in balance in your body for blood pressure. So I just wanted to mention that because it's the second time I've heard it in the same day. So I love that adding potassium as a food or in your food has made a difference for you.
Yeah. And I eat that breakfast. My kids make fun of me because that's the only breakfast I eat now. And even if I'm eating at noon, it's still my breakfast. They even wrote a little song to Taylor Swift's Karma all about my breakfast for my birthday.
That's hilarious. You're a creature of habit, right?
Like, oh, totally.
Yeah. See, Chad is too. Yeah. Oh, that's, you've got that same kind of a personality of like, cause he has his certain things that he eats at certain times and the way he likes to open. And so I totally get it. I love it. Do you have a scientist's mind by any chance, Mochy?
Don't think so. My wife does.
Okay. Yeah. Well, okay. She and I can connect about that, but yeah. So if you've been listening to my podcast for a while, you know what a fan I am of Dr. Tim Spector and the work he's doing with Zoe. I was first introduced to his work in 2015, and I've been following his research ever since. What I love most about the Zoe Science and Nutrition podcast is that they have weekly interviews with world-leading experts who explain how their latest research can benefit your health. Recently, I was thrilled to finally meet him face-to-face as we recorded an episode for the Zoe Science and Nutrition podcast, and this episode aired on April 11th. We had a chance to talk about the world's biggest intermittent fasting study, and I had the opportunity to explain the clean fast to Jonathan, which may explain why he didn't enjoy his prior experiences with fasting. Search for Zoe Science and Nutrition on your podcast player or on YouTube to hear the latest episode, and don't forget to look for the April 11th episode to hear me, Tim, and Jonathan talk about the world's biggest intermittent fasting study. We all face stress in our daily lives. What if the answer to a better stress response is in one key nutrient? I'm talking about magnesium, and specifically Magnesium Breakthrough by Bioptimizers. This one-of-a-kind product is designed to reverse low levels of magnesium, which could have a positive effect on our stress response. But don't take my word for it. Here's a quote from a 2020 issue of the scientific journal Nutrients. Results suggest that stress could increase magnesium loss, causing a deficiency. And in turn, magnesium deficiency could enhance the body's susceptibility to stress, resulting in a magnesium and stress vicious circle. I only recommend Magnesium Breakthrough by Bioptimizers. It's the only organic full-spectrum magnesium supplement that includes 7 unique forms of magnesium for stress resilience and better sleep. Simply go to bioptimizers.com/ifstories. Promo code IFSTORIES10 to get your magnesium breakthrough and find out this month's gift with purchase. That's bioptimizers.com/IFSTORIES. Promo code IFSTORIES10. But I totally get it. But I love that you have found a solution through food because I think that is, you know, food is medicine. And you were missing something that your body needed and you found the solution.
Food is definitely medicine. And, you know, that's part of the business I work in, too, is we're connecting families to farmers so they know where their food comes from and they're eating healthy food. I mean, you said it best. Food is totally medicine.
Yep. And figuring out, I mean, you could have just been like, well, my blood pressure's high. I think I'll take a blood pressure pill.
Well, that's what they wanted me in the hospital. In the hospital, you know, they even though I didn't have a stroke, they felt that I needed to take blood pressure medicine. And there is no way I wanted to do that, you know, because I looked at all the side effects. I have a conflicted relationship with Western medicine. My dad was a doctor. And I asked him once, you know, why did you want to be a doctor, Dad? And instead of saying, because I wanted to help people, because I'm interested in healing, he said, I wanted the white jacket. He wanted the respect that a doctor gets in our culture. And our doctors do get a lot of respect in our culture that I think is kind of overbalanced. I mean, Western medicine can do a lot of great things when it comes to surgery and fixing things. But when it comes to our general health, I think they're off. They don't value nutrition.
Well, and you know, you're right there. And I love that your dad was refreshingly honest with you. He's like, I just felt like a doctor was a great, respected profession. That I get that totally. And you know, what you're saying about the medical profession in general, I have been very fortunate to be part of a health and wellness community that is full of functional medicine doctors, and nutrition is at the core of everything that they do. Nutrition, hormones, finding the root cause. And I think more and more doctors are realizing that, hey, the paradigm of here's what's happening, here's some pills for that, is not leading to better health in general. It's just leading to more prescriptions to manage the side effects from the other prescriptions. And so there are definitely a lot of great forward-thinking doctors who are not liking the direction that we're going. Let me just put it that way. So you know exactly what I mean. But was your dad just a traditional medicine all the way?
And he wouldn't even, you know, whenever I had an issue like a sore throat or something and came to him, he wouldn't diagnose me. He would send me to another doctor. Right, which I thought was kind of strange.
He didn't want to look at it. He's like, here, go to this other doctor.
Yeah.
That is a little strange.
Yeah. So I try and stay away from doctors unless I break something or totally need it. I don't want to take pills. So, you know, intermittent fasting for me is my health care. You know, I do it to maintain my healthy body. And
that's
and
a beautiful way of looking at it.
You know, there's another book I read by James Nestor called Breath, all about our conflicted relationship to breathing. You know, we're very shallow breathers. And he advocated, you know, this was all in the search for lower blood pressure too, taping your mouth shut at night to sleep. And I was like, that's crazy. I don't think I can do that. But, you know, if it has the benefits, I'll try it. And I didn't think I'd be able to do it. I taped my mouth shut, but immediately, you know, I have to wake up on Thursdays at really early to begin my drive to Boston to deliver food. And I would toss and turn at night trying to fall asleep. But with my mouth taped shut and breathing through my nose, my whole breathing rhythm changes and it just lulls me right to sleep.
Wow. I have heard that before. I actually tried it and I couldn't handle it. I might not have given it enough time, but I had a friend, this is back in the Facebook groups days, someone who is a friend of mine who had gone on one of the Delay Don't Deny cruises. And then we, you know, became friends. Well, I knew her in real life, but she was experimenting with mouth taping and she told me about it. And I'm like, well, let me just see. And I'm sure Chad was thinking, what is Jen doing now? Right.
I do.
But do you still do it to this day?
You know, during the pandemic, with all the masks we had, I built a contraption with Velcro so I could bind my mouth shut rather than use the tape. And my wife had a field day with that, taking pictures of me before going to bed with this mask wrapped around my face. But that doesn't work as well as the tape, you know, because it falls off more. So yeah, I still do it. I love it. It puts me right to sleep at night. And if ever my nose clogs up at night, I just rip it off. Sometimes I wake up in the morning and the tape is stuck to the wall and I'm snoring away. And that's another side effect is, you know, I'm a snorer, and by taping your mouth shut, you know, my wife loves it because I do not snore nearly as much.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense. That makes a lot of sense. Well, I'm glad that's a habit that is stuck. And I have not read that book, but I've heard it mentioned, you know, over the years since it came out, and just the whole idea that we're not breathing properly.
And it leads to a lot of problems with our teeth, which is, you know, very counterintuitive. But it's very interesting. I definitely recommend that you read it.
Okay. I wonder why it shifted. Like, why did people change?
He goes through it in the book.
It to being, you know, shallow.
Yeah.
Okay. So he'll explain it. Because that, you know, my curious mind is like, why are we doing it differently now? What is it? But all right. Well, I may take a look at that because it sounds super interesting. So what else? I know you're doing all sorts of things.
Well, I also got into, you've heard of Wim Hof.
I have. Yep. He's so interesting.
He is. And he does that cold plunging. And I do his breath work, which is, you know, it's yogic breathing. He just took it and, you know, made it his own. But it's basically just yogic breathing. And I do that every morning, you know, because breath is our life, you know, and it takes 10 minutes. You just do a bunch of deep breaths, hold your breath. I mean, he outlines it in his plan. You can find it online. And that led me to cold plunging. And we live on a creek. So in the summer, we have a nice little waterfall with a nice little cold pool at the end of it. So at the beginning of my day, you know, I do my exercises and I go up, sit at the base of the waterfall and get in the cold water up to my chin and sit there as long as I can stand it. That's really good for cardiac health. And that led me to exploring saunas. I've always loved saunas. I was a ski bum in my 20s and after skiing would love to sit in the sauna. And so during the pandemic, I built myself a sauna. And sauna every week, religiously. Every Sunday is sauna night. And I sit in the sauna for an hour, three rounds of 20 minutes. And in between, we have a Rubbermaid 100-gallon tank outside because the creek is frozen over in the winter. And I cold plunge into that between rounds.
Oh my gosh!
In the winter, yes.
In the winter!
And that has made such a difference in my life, too. I mean, you come out of that and you feel like you're completely reborn. I sleep so well on Sunday nights. And
wow.
I enjoyed, I'm not a builder by trade. I'm totally self-taught by YouTube and books. And we moved to Vermont in 2011 and bought an old hunting camp on 10 acres of land. And I started by building a chicken coop. And then I built us a dance hall up the hill to learn how to, you know, build doors and windows and roofs and walls. And then in 2017, we burned down the hunting camp on purpose to make space for our new house. And I spent 2 years and built us 1,200 square foot house, completely off grid. We powered by solar power and hydropower. We pump water from the creek into a tank in the basement, then into a pressure tank for our water system. We don't have any septic. We humanure, which is a great use of our waste, which would just go into the ground and then be pumped away. You know, years later, we turn in the fertilizer for our fruit trees and our vegetable garden.
Wow. You're like living the way people were living, but with the modern conveniences, yes. With yeah, the solar power.
Pretty much. My wife is the gardener. You know, she grows our food. And so after I built the houses, I got excited to build the sauna. And I swear, it's the best thing I've ever built. And I loved it so much that I wrote a book about how to build it. It's called Plans for a Simple Sauna. And I had a blast doing it. You know, lots of pictures, diagrams, history of the sauna, history of sauna ceremony, health benefits of the sauna. And I sell it on Amazon.
I love that. So for everybody who's listening, that is Plans for a Simple Sauna. That sounds so cool. Tell me a little bit about what it, so I imagine, is yours a traditional sauna that has a heat source or is it infrared? What is your type of sauna?
Wood-fired sauna. It's an 8x8 box.
That's what I
with
figured.
A wood stove in it. And it heats up to, I like it 190 degrees. And I bought some rocks on eBay from Finland, lava rocks, that I put on top of the stove so you can have a nice steam bath in there as well. And like I swear, it is the best thing I've ever built. And that's why I wrote the book, so I could share it. And I don't advertise at all. And without any advertising, I've sold 100 books on Amazon. People are finding it.
Yay. That's great. And people are interested in things like saunas. They really are. I really miss my, I had an infrared sauna when we lived in Augusta, but with the move, you know, moving it, because it was a three-person sauna, moving it and all, we were having a very simple move. So we didn't end up moving the sauna, but I miss having a sauna. And I really think I would like, I liked the infrared sauna, but I think I would really like a traditional one with the steam in there.
Yeah, it's Chad a builder. Have Chad check out my book. I mean, I'm not a builder. I learned everything from talking to friends who are builders, reading books, and YouTube. YouTube is an awesome resource for, you know, building.
Yeah. Over the years, he's gotten so much better at doing things. I mean, you know, we got married in 1991 and like he didn't know how to do anything. Like, you know, if the toilet stopped flushing, he didn't know what to do, you know, but he figured it out. Just like you said, he YouTubes things and figures it out. Now he can do all sorts of things. And I don't know that he could build a whole house, but maybe he could if he took the time to learn. Because I mean, everybody who builds a house learned.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a learning process. I loved it. I've run out of things to build now, and now my wife is like, now it's time to maintain everything that you've built.
Well, that takes time, too. So, you know, that is such an interesting way of life. You are really living off the land and being off the grid and growing things and not having a septic tank. So interesting. So what do your kids think? How old are your girls?
My girls are 18 and 14. And the 18-year-old is down with it, but the 15-year-old right now is going through the phase where our house is too small. Why do we have to poop in a bucket kind of thing? But I think she appreciates it on some level.
Well, she will, you know, even if she doesn't now, she will later. She's going to look back on this and think, yeah, that was all weird, but it was the best thing ever. And so, you know, I really have a feeling that she'll look back on it like that. But that teenage year, those teenage years, they do think things are weird if we're not doing everything everyone else did. I remember when Will was away at Governor's Honors Program for the trombone, he sent me a cryptic text and he said, "Why did you raise us so weird?" And I was like, "What are you talking about?" And it was just because we didn't have a lot of junk food around the house, you know, for them, and sodas and all the, you know, the snack foods like that. And to him, that was weird. So we were not pooping in buckets. So I imagine that would have been a different conversation as well.
My intermittent fasting has created some conflict in our family. Well, it was such a great thing for me at first. I was like way into it. I was talking to everybody about it. I was talking about it every day. I had a timer going off, you know, when my window closed. And my daughter, who's 18 now, was 14 at the time I started doing it. And unbeknownst to me, she started intermittent fasting herself. And during the pandemic, when school closed, we homeschooled them, but she decided she wanted to go to high school. And so she enrolled in high school, and halfway through high school, the pandemic came and closed down, which wasn't, you know, a big shock for us because we had been homeschooling. So we're, you know, hey, we got our girl back at home again. And during that time of, you know, being at home all the time, she somehow developed an eating disorder. And I don't really want to get into it too much because it's her story to tell.
It's her story. Yep.
It switched up in her mind during her recovery process that intermittent fasting was an eating disorder. And so, you know, while at first, you know, during the first year, you know, the family was supportive, it became a bone of contention. Like still to this day, the 15-year-old, every time, you know, I'm done eating, she harasses me about, you know, you have an eating disorder. This intermittent fasting is nothing but an eating disorder. You're messed up. You're going to die. And, you know, my wife is supportive of it till she knows that it's not an eating disorder, but it creates conflict where, you know, I like to close my window at 6, and but now that's seen by my youngest daughter as, you know, problematic. So it got contentious, but I learned fairly fast that, you know, I don't have to close my window at 6. I can close it later and just open it later. So, you know, so instead of closing at 6 and opening at 11, like I'm a creature of habit, like you said. And so I like having, you know, close at 6, eat at 11, but I to maintain peace in the family, I realized, okay, the family's going to eat dinner at 8 o'clock tonight. So that's what I'm going to do. And tomorrow I will not eat till 1 o'clock.
Okay. So I can see, do you think that some of the concern that your younger daughter has picked up is because she watched her sister struggle with an eating disorder? And so then she's like, just any kind of restrictive eating feels like it must be disordered, perhaps.
That's in it too.
I can see how that might happen. And, you know, if just for listeners, I want to point out that, you know, fasting is not an eating disorder, but people who have an eating disorder might use fasting as a tool. Like, for example, taking laxatives is not an eating disorder if you need laxatives because you're struggling with constipation. But if you're taking laxatives to purge your body, that is disordered. So it's just, you know, thinking of fasting as not an eating disorder, but a tool that someone with an eating disorder might misuse. So I think that this might just remind us that it's super important to talk to our kids about fasting in a way that helps them understand, you know, adults don't need to eat as much as kids do. I don't have a growing body, you know, things like that. And maybe just not really emphasizing the word fasting, perhaps. Just talk about like eating instead. Like I feel better when I don't eat past 6, or I feel better when I wait till 11. And just really you teaching those kids to tune into their body rather than like rigid fasting, perhaps. Do you think that would be a good shift for people to consider?
Yes, that's great. I feel a lot of guilt over how I acted back at the beginning, because I was fixated on my weight. I was, you know, wow, I lost 15 pounds. I'm 160. Let's see if I can get down to 155. And my daughter started doing that too. She's like, Daddy, I'm at 130 now. And I didn't see the eating disorder. I have a blind spot to it. It runs in my family. My sisters have had it. And I guess I must block it out. And so I didn't notice anything was wrong until, you know, my wife clued me in to what was going on.
Okay. Well, I want you to release that guilt, because don't feel that you should feel guilty about that, because you didn't really even think about it at the time, and you had no inkling that your daughter was picking it up differently. I think that just goes to show how very careful we have to be when talking about weight with especially teenagers and I would say girls, but I think boys too. I like really, you know, not having the fixation on weight, but instead of modeling scale number concerns, focus on how we're feeling and being healthy and being strong and feeling good in our bodies, and, you know, modeling the feasting and that we're enjoying our food. And I think that's a lesson we all can learn, because what I have really learned over the years of doing this podcast is how many of us carry what we heard our mom, dad, friend, a careless boyfriend made a comment, something that we heard early on stuck with us and changed our relationship with our bodies and food. So as parents, we just need to be mindful of what we're saying. So I think this is a good conversation for us to be having. So, you know, as long as we just really model that we're not scared of food and we're not overly obsessed with the scale. I mentioned it, and I can't remember, probably Delay Don't Deny, that I was grateful that I had had boys, because all those years that I was struggling so much with my weight and trying the crazy diets, you know, I don't want to say disorder. I didn't have an eating disorder, but it certainly felt like, looking back, disordered patterns of eating and a disordered fixation of trying to control, you know, what I was doing. And it was only fasting that got rid of that. But we do the best we can, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, we do. And my daughter's great now. She's made a great recovery. She is 6 months into her gap year around the world tour. She's in Australia right now, and tomorrow she's going to go snorkeling on the Great Barrier Reef. She's traveling with her best friend. They've been planning it since they were 10, and they made it. I know, and that's one of the reasons I had to reschedule this interview, because on the day we had it scheduled was the day we had to take her to the airport to see her off into the world, which was an incredibly proud moment.
Wow. And, you know, when you're 18, you know, you're an adult, but it's got to be hard for a dad. She sat now, like, now we know that an 18-year-old is still just a baby. She's a baby girl. Sending her off into the world.
Yeah. She set out when she was 17. When she decided to go to school, she was actually going to have to go into eighth grade. And she went with a friend and toured the school. And it's like, I do not want to be in middle school. And so she just applied to the high school and they took her right in. And so she graduated as a 17-year-old. She just turned 18 in January. And we went over Christmas break, we went over to England to meet her, because her friend's grandparents lives in England. And it was just remarkable seeing the change in her. You know, 4 months traveling with her friend, she's turned into a young woman. And my wife and I are both travelers. We're both backpackers. And so we're super proud that we've raised such an awesome backpacking child.
Absolutely. So let's talk about food, because I don't want us to not talk about food. You know, how would you describe your eating style? What's your relationship with the food that you eat? All of that.
Well, I love my breakfast, which I eat every day. Food for me is like I said, healthcare and fuel. I'm a creature of habit. I tend to eat the same things. I like, you know, veggies and fruit. And my wife does most of the cooking because she grows the food, and I'm just happy to eat whatever she cooks. And she's always telling me, you know, every meal, I grew this in our garden, I grew that in our garden, which is awesome. You know, that our food, we're producing our own food. Food is fuel. we have to eat it every day, and I eat what I enjoy, and I eat what makes me feel good and what keeps me healthy.
So you're not a vegetarian?
No.
Okay. I wasn't sure because you mentioned a lot of veggies and fruit, and your breakfast that you have every day was.
Yeah. Well, we don't eat a lot of meat. We eat a lot of, if we're going to eat meat, it's mostly chicken and salmon. And we'll have, you know, I'll have a hamburger once a month or so.
Yeah. I love a good burger here and there. Not every day, but when I'm ready for one, man, it just hits the spot. So let's talk about the business that you're in, the company that I love the way you described it, building a sustainable food network, connecting consumers to farmers. So you're in Vermont.
They are. The man who founded the company came from Boston, and he moved up to Vermont, and he wanted to do a community-supported agriculture farm where you grow stuff, and people pay shares, and they come and they pick up food every week.
And that's called a CSA, right?
A CSA, yes. Okay. Community-supported agriculture. And he talked to a lot of farmers, and he realized, talking to them, that farmers had a problem finding a market for their food. They produce more food than they could get rid of. And so since he came from Boston, he came up with this idea to help these farmers out, help small farmers out by giving them a market, by creating this online grocery store of sustainable organic food, with the whole basis behind it being know your farmer, know where your food is coming from. Food is your healthcare. And so he set up the model. It started in 2009, I believe. I've been there since 2014. And we exploded during the pandemic. You know, our orders doubled. And since then, we've been struggling a bit with the recession and prices going up and inflation. But we have a dedicated base in Boston of about 1,000 people who order from us every week and have raised their kids on, you know, organic food from Vermont. And we used to do a harvest thing in the fall where the families and the farmers would come up and we'd get together at our hub and the farmers would meet the families and we'd have farm tours and sit down for a big dinner and just celebrate our community. And the pandemic put an end to that, and we haven't gotten back to it. And I keep advocating for it because it was such a beautiful expression of community.
I think that is really important, the fact that it is a community and the people know where their food is coming from. And to meet the farmer, I think, because we used to know, if you go back, you know, how we used to live before modern times, you knew where all your food came from. You grew it yourself or you traded with your neighbor. And we've lost touch. I saw a TikTok somebody shared with me, and it was a girl, and her friend came over, and her friend's like, why do you have all these bags of lemons in your, why are you buying lemons at the grocery store? She's like, I like to cook with them. I like to use lemons. And turns out she had a lemon tree in her yard that was producing lemons, and she did not know you could just go out and pick it and use it. She's like, don't you have to do something to it to use it? And the girl was like, she made the video of herself. She's like, I had no idea you could just harvest fruit from a tree in your yard and eat it. And I'm like, wow, you know, we've got to get kids learning about food. I think right now, if I could go back or if I had new kids right now or grandkids one day, they need to learn about growing food and where it comes from. It doesn't just come from the Walmart grocery store. It does, but it blew my mind that the girl was 28 years old. And she didn't know that you could use the lemons from the tree.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery, code Wondery.
It's 3 o'clock somewhere. Time for a My Mochi ice cream snack. My Mochi ice cream is cool, creamy scoops of premium ice cream wrapped in sweet, pillowy dough. And get this, all of My Mochi's fabulous flavors like strawberry, mango, double chocolate, and cookies and cream are only around 80 calories per piece. Talk about a guilt-free, indulgent experience. Each box of My Mochi ice cream has 6 perfectly portioned, gluten-free mochis that are great for grab-and-go. So feel good while curbing your afternoon cravings or the midnight munchies. Yeah, You know who you are, with the joyfully chill sensation of My Mochi Ice Cream. Find My Mochi Ice Cream at Target or visit MyMochi.com to locate a grocery store near you.
So what kind of foods are they growing up there in Vermont? Like what are people getting from this?
All kinds of root vegetables, kale, tomatoes. We have meat, dairy, lots of milk, lots of cheese, bread. We have a bakery here called Red Hen Bakery, which
that
makes
sounds
the
good.
Best bread.
Bread. And
we sell $20,000 worth of bread every week to people in Boston. They love the bread. We have pantry items. We have over 300 items that we sell.
And what's the name of the company that people are looking for? It only goes to the Boston area. Is that correct?
Boston, Cape Cod, and we also just started New York City.
Oh, okay. So, because I know we have listeners that live in all those places. So tell them how to find this online amazing Vermont grocery store.
It's called Farmers to You, and two is T-O, and U is Y-O-U, just like it sounds. FarmersToYou.com. You go to our website, and you can sign up. There's no obligation. You can suspend your order anytime you want. There's no membership fee. There is a minimum order of $40. That's the only constraint. And it's a great way of, you know, being part of a community.
I think so too. And so when you deliver it, do you deliver it to like a central location? People come and get it, or are you like delivering it to their home?
We have 23 pickup locations throughout Boston, and we also have home delivery. And the New York option is home delivery only right now. Our delivery company in Boston has expanded to the Cape and New York. So we're able to offer, right now we have one order from New York City, and we'd like to see that grow.
Okay, so New York City listeners, it is time for you to go to farmerstoyou.com.
And the food is a little more expensive than what you'd find at the grocery store, but you have to look at it. This is your health care. You know, this is your health insurance. Eating, you know, organic, sustainably raised food is the best thing you can put into your body.
It's better for the world, really. You know, it's better for, you know, if we can afford the investment. And not everybody can, right? It's better to eat vegetables if you have to get them at the Walmart grocery store than to not eat vegetables. And recognizing it's a luxury to be able to buy, you know, the more expensive food. But if you can, it's definitely worth doing, right? You pay now or you pay later is the way I look at it. Yeah, and one beautiful thing about intermittent fasting is we're saving so much money on not eating as frequently.
That is true. I definitely eat a lot less. And I don't miss it. You know, like I was a comfort eater. You know, at night reading a book, I'd make my yummy, you know, and now I have a glass of tea.
Yeah, I love that. And you've developed new habits and you realize that you really did not need to eat all the time late into the evening. So tell me about some of your non-scale victories. You know, we often talk about our non-scale victories, things that we've noticed. You know, you lost the pounds you wanted to lose. You're at a healthy weight. But what are some of the other victories unrelated to that, like your health? I know you mentioned your blood pressure.
No more panic attacks. I haven't had any panic attacks since then. Anxiety, completely, pretty much gone. In the beginning, eating together with the family. Now we're all on different schedules again. So dinner is like the only time we eat together. Just peace of mind too. I know I'm doing something that is good for me. I'm taking care of myself. So that makes me feel good. And also, just it opened me up to so much more. You know, once I started seeing that I could be proactive about taking care of myself, it led me, you know, to the breath book and to saunas and cold plunges and stuff like that, keeping my mouth shut at night.
You're a biohacker, Mochi.
Yeah, I try lots of things
yeah,
and see
yeah,
what
that's
sticks.
Really what you do. And you see what feels right. Like I tried I probably didn't give it very long. I might have taped my mouth shut like one time. And I was like, nope, not for me. But you need to give these things a little time. But I also didn't read that book. So maybe I would be more motivated if I read the book and saw why. It was just a friend had mentioned it. But it's definitely something that sounds intriguing. Okay. So is there anything else that you're doing that you haven't mentioned that's interesting? Because I've just really enjoyed exploring all these different avenues.
Hey, I'm working on a hot tub.
Oh, now see, I would love to have a hot tub.
I want, you know,
so you're building it?
I'm building it, and I'm failing miserably right now. Because I wanted to build a cube, a 4 foot deep, 5 foot wide, 5 foot. 5x5x4 hot tub, and I built it figuring I could, I forgot about how much water weighs, You know, it's 700 gallons of water weighs almost 2 tons. And I thought I had sealed all the seams enough with, you know, rubber and sealant and mortar and tile. And when I filled it up, it leaked. And I fired it once, got in it. It was the second best thing I've ever built. I loved it. It's a wood-fired hot tub, so you have a snorkel stove in it. And it was deep. I could completely submerge, do little flips in it. Loved it. But the weight of that water busted open the seams, and now it won't hold water anymore. So last summer, I tried fiberglassing it. Thought that would work. That didn't work. It still leaks. And I'm trying to stay away from the cedar hot tubs because they have a limited lifespan. You know, they'll rot away over the course of 5-10 years. And I like the cube shape, and I had it all tiled nicely. And it looks beautiful, but it doesn't hold water.
I have a feeling this is a challenge you're going to solve.
I hope so. I'm stumped. I'm completely stumped. I've been talking to pool companies, trying maybe, you know, have a small pool liner built and insert that into it. And maybe that'll do it. But it's hard to find an affordable pool liner. I mean, I might as well just buy a
hot tub. See, this is what I know about you, Mochy. You like to figure it out.
And I will figure it out.
It's not always about what's cheaper.
Yep. I totally will figure it out.
Yeah. I love that. So do you see any more books in your future?
Yeah, I'm working on one right now, which is kind of esoteric. I've realized that, you know, the most fundamental part of ourselves, our cells, you know, which have been around for 2.5 billion years, are overlooked in the importance they play in our being. Through our cells, we're connected to everything else on Earth. We are, you know, we're basically, you know, just another facet of everything. And cells are made up of atoms. And I'm into astrology and the tarot. So I'm writing a book about the tarot of the periodic table.
So cool.
I know, it's very interesting. You know, so I'm learning a lot about the atoms right now, and I'm coming up with the artwork. I'm using AI to help me with that because AI is exploding right now. And, you know, a lot of people are scared of AI, but AI is...
Well, you know, the health and wellness community that I'm a part of has been talking about AI since January of 2023, the first time we were at a meeting and we started to see it. And it was just ChatGPT at that point. But I just got together with the community again a year later, and we were in Tucson. And it is amazing how far it's come in 1 year since we first looked at it. Like, I am now using AI to help write my show notes for the podcast. Like, I just upload the audio. It's a separate platform. And like, it's amazing how it comes up with the, and I'm like, wow, how did AI figure out what we were talking about and phrase it like this? So it's a tool. And, you know, I have to zhuzh it a little bit. And what we really had hammered into our heads is use AI as a first draft tool. It's not meant to be how to create the content. It still needs a human touch because it doesn't have consciousness. It doesn't have, you know, it's not human, but it is a great first draft. So I love what you're doing.
The artwork it creates is pretty amazing. Yeah. I've been creating the cards using, you know, the Copilot program that Microsoft came out with, and it comes up with some really amazing images that, you know, I couldn't draw.
Wow. My son is a painter. And he uses AI to generate a scene that he would like to paint. So he'll ask it to generate, you know, like beach houses on the beach or something. And it will generate it, and then he can paint it with, you know, he's not, you know, infringing on somebody's images. He's instead getting an original image that he can then paint with his oil paints. So that it's a little scary. Like, when I first heard about it a year ago, I was scared. And someone has written an AI generated biography of me that someone read and said it sounds crazy. It's like Kindle Unlimited or something, and it, you know, it isn't all correct. But I think we're only scratching the surface. And then I think about, you know, like the scary movies of like War Games and stuff from when we were a kid. I can't remember what that movie was called. Was it called War Games? So that maybe that's why I'm a little scared of it, because we're like, the machine was taking over. We just want to avoid that at all costs. But I definitely, you know, keep me posted. Email me when you publish this new book. I'd be very interested in reading it because, you know, I'm pretty woo-woo, you know, looking at, you know, Joe Dispenza's work, the intersection between science and spirituality. And when a scientist starts to dig in and sees this, you know, the spiritual fingerprints on everything, that's fascinating to me.
Yeah. I think that's the missing link, and why our culture is kind of spiraling into chaos is because we've lost the spiritual part of ourselves.
Yeah. So true. So we are almost out of time. What would you tell someone just starting out with intermittent fasting, or what do you wish you knew when you first started?
I would tell them just to go for it, you know, just try it and see what works for you. And I also, you know, if they have kids, I would, you know, tell them my story about what happened with me and my daughter, and, you know, just to be conscious of, you know, what you're talking about, not be so focused on weight and body image. But, you know, I play up the health benefits. You know, like I said, I've never struggled with weight. For me, it's totally, you know, maintaining a healthy body.
And I think that what you just talked about with what you say to your kids is important with any weight loss approach, not just fasting, because it just so happened that you were using intermittent fasting as your tool, but any conversation about dieting with a emphasis on just body weight and scale weight is something to be cautious with our kids. Well, Mochy, it has been so much fun to talk to you, and I really am excited in that. Promise me, like I said, that you're going to email me when your new book is ready.
Do you have an intermittent fasting story to tell? Email me at jen@intermittentfastingstories.com and I'll add you to the lineup. That's GIN@intermittentfastingstories.com. The world wants to hear your story. That's it for today. Remember, I may have a doctorate, but I'm not a medical doctor. So don't use anything you hear on this podcast as a substitute for medical advice. Please always check with your doctor or healthcare provider if you have medical questions. I'll talk to you next week, Fasting Family, where we will hear another inspiring story. Have a great week and fast on. Intermittent Fasting Stories is edited, mixed, and mastered by Resonate Recordings. To learn more, visit them at resonaterecordings.com or email them at hello@resonaterecordings.com. Intermittent Fasting Stories listeners will receive a free offer if you mention that you heard it on the podcast.
Once upon a beat. Remember those stories and fables that would capture your imagination and you couldn't wait to see how they would unfold? And now, when you read them as an adult, you think, some of these old tales could use a fresh spin. We have a perfect podcast to bring you the stories you remember, remix, and reimagine for the kids in your life today. Join me, DJ Fuse, and my trusty turntable, Baby Scratch, as we spin up new tales in the New Kids and Family Podcast, Once Upon a Beat. Yeah. Wondry and Tinkercast are bringing you a jam-packed, music-filled weekly party where hip-hop and fables meet. It's Once Upon a Beat. Follow Once Upon a Beat on the Wondry app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to Once Upon a Beat early and ad-free right now by joining Wondry Plus in the Wondry app or Wondry Kids Plus in Apple Podcasts. Once Upon a Beat.
In the climate-ravaged year of 2072, the city of Pura stands as a miraculous green haven, a geoengineered paradise that protects fortunate residents from the global catastrophes of heat domes, fires, floods, and droughts. Demetria Lopez heads up Pura's public relations, tirelessly promoting the city's idyllic image. But when she stumbles upon a dark secret that, if exposed, would be the downfall of Pura's existence, she must decide who and what she is willing to protect. From Wondery, the makers of Academy and Dr. Death, The Last City stars actors Rhea Seehorn, Jeannie Tirado, and Maury Sterling. Follow The Last City on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can binge all episodes of The Last City early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.